What's going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode of the Remote Local Podcast. I got my buddy Dan Katz on. What's going on, Dan?
How are you, Neil? Doing great.
Awesome. Stoked to have you. So this is the coaching call series, something kind of new I'm trying. I've only done a couple of these. I met Dan through Twitter and just been following his growth, and he's doing an awesome job of building his clean company in public, which is really fun. So definitely follow Dan after this. If you listen to this podcast, just to see what he's doing. I love that you post publicly, man. I think it helps a lot of people out.
Yeah, it's exciting, and it's great to be able to share what I've been learning with other people and share ideas that way as well.
Cool. Well, Dan, let me preface this for everyone. And would you mind sharing a little bit about your situation? Like, are you working on this full-time, part-time? When did you start? What are your goals? We'll just kick it off there.
Sure thing. So again, my name's Dan. I'm the owner of the business Surely Clean. The business is based in New Jersey, which is where I'm originally from. So I started the business in November, formed the LLC in November of 2022, started serving my first customers at the end of January of 2023. So February was my first full month of operations. I'm doing this on the side, you can say, because I do have a W-2 job. So I'm kind of doing this during lunch break and at the very end of the day, managing that. And as I'm looking to scale right now, I'm in the part of the business where I'm thinking about onboarding a VA to take over some of those daily operational tasks, which is really exciting because it's certainly getting a lot to manage both the W-2s during the day and all the lead flow and operational management of the business itself.
Awesome, man. A couple of pointed questions just to understand your business model, and then we'll dive into your questions. Where are most of your leads coming from at the moment?
Most of my leads are coming from Google Local Service Ads or LSA.
Okay, cool. What else are you doing in marketing?
For marketing, this past month, I've had a pretty good marketing campaign where I set up an automated drip campaign in Go High Level or CleanPour. Mm-hmm. To reach out to about over 600 local realtors in the area, where I did voicemail drops followed by a sequence of emails and text messages over the course of a week. And so after following that campaign, I had a ton of realtors reach out to me. Now I do a bunch of turnover cleans, like move in and move out cleans for different realtors. Also deep cleans ahead of open houses or when professional photos are being taken of a home that's being put on market.
Sweet. Sounds good. All right, man. Well, hey, let's dive into your question. What can I help you out with?
Sure. So I feel like there's a ton of content out there on starting the business and very beginning stages of what to do, forming the LLC, getting your first customer. But I feel like there isn't enough to be spoken about with regards to growing an already had business, right? Like,
yep.
So after I was a few months in, I had $10,000 of revenue per month. I'm like, okay, like what's asking myself, what's next? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of people out there that are maybe in a similar boat of how do I continue to grow the business or what should I be tracking maybe from KPIs perspective? So maybe any insights that you want to just share there on how do you grow from 10 to 20 to 50 and so forth in monthly?
Yeah, I love the question. And by the way, man, I agree. I think there's kind of a gap in knowledge because the easiest thing that you could sell people, honestly, as far as coaching or whatever, is getting rid of their pain. Many times people are stuck in a W-2 job. They want to get rid of pain. They're willing to pay to start their business. But not many people think, oh, crap, now I've started my business. How do I actually get to the level I want to do? And not many people will teach that. So I think it's the harder question and it's harder to solve. But the answer is there is a way to solve it because people have done it in the past, right? So definitely there's a trajectory to follow over here. So two ways to think about this business model and any home service business model, there's two sides of the coin. There's supply and demand, which is cleaners and customers. You either have one or two problems in this business. That's it. Do you have a cleaner problem? Do you have a custom problem? I tell my franchisees that every single time. They say, hey, I've X, Y, and Z issue. I say, cool. Which of these two issues is it on the seesaw? It's either supply or demand issue. Which is the issue right now for you, Dan? Is it a supply or demand issue?
Yeah. So for me, it's definitely on the cleaner side. It's funny because I remember starting out And everyone was saying, focus on hiring, have your hiring funnel going as much as possible. And about 2 months ago, I was in a position where I had so many cleaners and not enough customers.
Yeah.
Now, this last month, I am overbooked and don't have enough cleaners. I actually turned off my ads for the last week because I'm in a position where I really need to focus on hiring. And the customers have been flowing in fairly easily recently.
Cool. So cleaner issue over there. So there's a couple things I have in mind. One thing I do want to note, though, the season we're in right now is June. The place you're located in New Jersey, most markets have some level of seasonality with the business. The goal with any business is to extend the season. Here's what I mean by that. Typically, you're going to see like May to maybe like August being high season, maybe September. Then it drops off a cliff. And typically, you see that like April, the earlier piece is like kind of scaling up. September, October is kind of scaling down. What you want to avoid is those peaks and valleys, right? So when you come to seasonality like this, in theory, I'll say this for next season, since you can't do this season, you need to hire ahead of time for high season, or else you're going to miss on all this revenue and demand which is coming here. And once the demand goes away, you can't fight against seasonality. You can't just spend your way out of a slump. So the best case that many people should be doing is overhire. That way you're ready for high season. You capitalize on that revenue and you understand that when October comes around, it's going to drop and that's okay because you grabbed that revenue that you can during the high season. Now, you're in a position now where you probably do need to hire fast in order to capitalize on all this lead flow coming in. The best case scenario for you is like, yeah, you could turn off ads, but we want you to be able to turn on ads and just like close at a crazy clip because I guarantee your competitors did not prepare for high season either, right? So overspending on that is one part of it. But Dan, your question is scale. The answer for most things in business when scale isn't work harder, right? It's who can I have to do this for me? Who's on your team right now? Is it just you?
It is just me. Yep.
Damn it, Dan. All right. Are you doing customer calls as well as cleaner issues?
Yes. I handle everything. I'm in the process of hopefully getting a VA onboarded. So that'll offload some of that stress and workload. But at the moment, it is a one-man show, correct?
Got it. When you hire a remote team member, what is the skill set you're looking for? Are you already in the process of hiring someone?
I'm in the process. I've been talking to several agencies and I'm in the final interview stage for several candidates.
Okay.
So I intend to hire someone to start off part-time, let's say 20 hours a week. Again, just to manage the back end of the business as they start to get comfortable again with my service area. I really want them to really get to know my geography and how the business works, because they will be a virtual offshore employee. And then eventually scale them in within the next few weeks to be full-time answering the phones and dealing with all those customer and operational issues as well.
So Dan, here's a mistake I made. I hired part-time for remote team labor, which is relatively cheap. It's a pain in the butt because here's why. They're going to be searching for other work. You're not going to have their full attention. The reality is you have a W-2 job. You don't need the income come from here. The big money comes later. If I was going to give myself advice a long time ago, it would be, hey, don't be cheap and just hire full-time, train them fast and move fast. If you think about it this way, you're paying, I'm going to throw out numbers, pretend you're paying this person $1,000 full-time, $500 part-time. That person can get you maybe two cleaners faster because they're working full-time. I would happily pay $250 for a good cleaner, right? Now, hopefully this person, if they take off a lot off of your plate, you're going to be able to close more sales, run more campaigns and go high level, do a lot more things you can do. So the first feedback I would give is if you are hiring this person part-time to save money, that's unnecessary from the position you're in. Better case, get them trained up faster and set proper expectations saying, I need you to hit these KPIs in a month, as opposed to 2 months, because in 2 months, maybe they need that amount of training at part-time, but they could hit it a whole month earlier if they're training fast. So I'd probably hire the person full-time. And all of our franchisees, I tell them, when you hire someone, don't hire part-time, always hire full-time.
Gotcha. And that's also interesting to hear. So you said hire full-time and also come up with KPIs to be able to keep track of their progress as well.
Correct. Right?
Not just the business, but make sure that they are overperforming well and above your expectations. That way they're a worthwhile employee to have.
Yeah. And honestly, like pretend they don't work out and not all of them are going to work out. It's awkward if you say, hey, I have to let you go because it's not working out. And they'll say, why is it not working out? And you're like, I don't know. I just kind of have a feeling that I'm not really doing it. Versus when they get onboarded, you tell them, I need at least 40% close rate after 1 month of me training you. I need you to line up 2 second round interviews per week with me. These are the KPIs. Here's how to do it. Tell me what training you need. I will give you 1 month to get trained up and then all the systems go. Now, the problem, Dan, is if you're hiring this person part-time, you're going to waste 2 months of your high season training this person and then assess them. The opportunity lost isn't how much you're paying them. It's how much business you're about to lose by not being able to service all the demand that's coming your way. So train them faster, get them onboarded, and get rid of them if you don't think the person's working out.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I appreciate that. That's great.
Yeah. And Dan, along with that, when you hire someone remote, and by the way, that's for sure, I agree with you. And your instinct is correct, is the way to scale is to hire someone. So the biggest bottleneck for you is hiring. Typically, the person you hire is going to be really good at 1 of 2 things, operations or sales. Your first hire is probably going to be doing both of them, meaning cleaner interviews plus take in phone calls. What happens eventually as you scale, you figure out, okay, this person's better at 1 of these 2 aspects. Then the second person you're bringing on is going to be better at the other one. Dan, just from speaking with you, I'm guessing you're pretty good at sales, talking with customers on the calls. So you probably want someone who maybe could handle that, but is probably going to be better at cleaner stuff, because I'm guessing you don't like that as much. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm balanced in between, because I'm trying to get into sales in my professional career outside of this, but I'm also came from an operational background. So I'm an engineer.
Got it. You can do both.
I can do both. I like to convince myself I can do both. So we'll see. We'll see again where the new hire will take, what position they'll be in to be able to satisfy the demand of my needs.
Cool. Yeah. And like, again, just keep that in mind. If they're probably going to be doing a little bit of both, don't get frustrated if not a killer at both. It's really hard to find someone who's really, really good at operations and sales for a role like you're hiring for. So Dan, do you know what your close rates are in terms of inbound leads?
Yeah. So I know for Google LSA, I typically, based on the calculator within LSA itself, I'm typically around 30 to 35% close rate.
Okay. How are you chasing them aggressively?
I would say just the past few weeks when I started implementing a CRM is when I actually started chasing more aggressively. But I haven't been maybe doing as much follow-up as I maybe could have been.
Okay. Gotcha. Typically what I tell my sales team is 50% is the goal, 40% is the minimum of where I want them to be in terms of sales conversion rates for inbound sales. Now, when it comes to things like LSA, you will have some days where you're like, okay, everyone's asking for a cleaning in an hour. What can I do? Right. So look at the data across the course of a month to properly assess. You can't really assess on a week by week basis even. But 40% is kind of the rate I would also pitch to my salesperson, the person you hire, saying, I need you to be converting at least what I'm converting in this case, which is 35 to 40%.
Sure. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. And then a question on scaling as well, when it comes to your already hired cleaners, is I haven't, again, knock on wood, I haven't encountered this problem yet, but with regards to cleaner retention, of how have you and your business and your franchisees set up internal systems to continue to create a positive work environment, and maybe bonus structures or additional compensation to incentivize your cleaners to remain with your organization?
Dan, are you using contractors?
Yes, I am.
Cool. There's a limit on what you can do. Now, people will go around those limits and set up a bunch of bonus programs. You can, to be honest, you're in New Jersey, which is like California, where they will go after you hard, right? There's some states where you're like, oh, okay, like, you know, it's more business friendly. New York, New Jersey, California, Washington, these are states where you just don't mess around with. So there's a limit on what you can do. But one thing I'll tell you, which is good news, is I've tried a lot of different tactics, because I even had opened up an employee-based cleaning company, try different tactics. You realize that the one thing which people care about the most is that you care about them. Oddly enough, like I tried so many different things, like, hey, here's a bonus structure. If you do this, you get this many points. And there's like all these fancy things. But really, as long as you like have a relationship with the worker, give them the benefit of the doubt when it makes sense. Tell them, hey, I know this thing happened. Don't worry, I'm going to cover it. Ask about their kid. Like, these sound so simple, but the relationship part is what they crave the most. Because if you think about it, they probably work for another cleaning company, maybe, where they treat them like, you're an employee, you have to go to this job, hustle, hustle, hustle. Or on the complete opposite end, they're working at Handy, where you can't even speak with someone. It's just all app-based, right? Very transactional. So oftentimes if they feel like you kind of care and kind of give a shit and that you actually pay well, right? Pay them decently. That is 90% of it. Other things you can do would be bonuses, typically incentivize them around reviews, typically what we do. If a customer leaves an online review for them, it's $20 for them as a bonus. They love that just because it's $20 immediately. You can, we used to do this, but stopped it just because it was kind of a hassle. Make that an Amazon gift card. Like, it just feels so much better as if it's a gift card as opposed to just, hey, we're going to add it to your pay, right? People just like to have that gift card type of feel. So I would say do that. The reality when it comes to managing anyone, any people, employees, contractors, doesn't really matter. Everyone's incentives are different. Some people really value money. Some people value recognition. Some people value time off. The key for you is to figure out which of these things the person actually values. If you try and incentivize someone with money and they're like, I'm more of a team member type of guy, it doesn't hit the same. Unfortunately, there's no cut and dry answer of tactics and tips to try. But the good news is that's okay because most of those things don't really work. Just keep it simple.
Sure. And I feel like on the topic of scaling and having that relationship with your cleaners, something that's been making me nervous in the back of my mind is as I hire a VA and take a little bit of a more backseat in the business, not in the weeds and in the operational day to day, my cleaners are going to be interacting with the VA as opposed to myself. So how have you managed that or ensured that your cleaners are satisfied with this new person that's coming in as opposed to yourself?
Yep. Depends 100% on who you're hiring and their personality. And letting that person who gets onboarded know, like, hey, we want to make sure you take care of the cleaners, make sure you get to know them, build a relationship. Simple as that. A lot of this has to do with what position you're hiring them for. This is the tough part at the beginning. You're hiring someone for both sales and operations. People typically are not both, right? So it's going to be a little bit tough, but you will very quickly see if this remote team member is more of an operations person or more of a salesperson. And don't be surprised, you onboard this person, you set a KPI, 40% close rate, and they hit 12% or 20%. If they do that after you've trained them, after you've tried to vet them and like everything, then you might think, well, this person is really good, has the same values as I do. Maybe they're just an operations person, you know? But whoever you onboard, especially in operations, needs to have the ability to build a relationship with the team members. And honestly, it is better they have that and not you to scale, right? Like none of my cleaners know who I am. Like now they don't even know who my operations manager is really. They just know the people on the ground who are speaking with them on the phone, who are the daily operations coordinators. Sure. That's fine. That's totally fine. So it's okay to let go of that control.
Okay, cool. And I feel like that just kind of feels a little nervous right now because it's the first time that I'm letting go of some aspect of the business, but I feel like that just comes with growing and with scaling and it's just a hump to come to get over it in this
process. For sure. Yeah. And look, like you could build a relationship with them, but Dan, like your time's better spent building campaigns to real estate agents. Like it's spent doing other things, not being bogged down with a lot of the day-to-day minutia. So.
Absolutely. Awesome. Now, I guess I'll switch gears over to talking a little bit about serving customers, different types of customers. So obviously, you know, we're in the cleaning space. You've also specialized in the short-term rental market. And that's something that's also really popular in my service area. You mentioned the seasonality of it, and there's a ton of week-to-week short-term rentals here. I'm curious, maybe this is a very specific question, but how does your business typically handle linens with regards to short-term rentals? Because I found that that's a very common question here. Sometimes they have a washing machine on site, sometimes they don't. And I'm curious what that looks like for your business.
Yeah, so we typically tell franchisees, we only work with people who have washing machines on site. Not only that, we need to ask what year and model it is, because if it's a really old one that's really small, they're not going to be happy because the cleaners aren't going to be able to fix it on time. Then no one's happy. Cleaners are pissed off. They're waiting there. Customers are pissed off. Like no one really wins in that scenario. So we ask them, is it on site? Yes. Cool. Is it new and is it big? Great. We could do it. Sometimes, very occasionally, there'll be someone who doesn't have it on site. If so, we say, is there a local fluff and fold we could drop it off and pick it up at on the way? They could set up an account at that fluff and fold where we just drop it off and say, hey, this is for Dan Katz's place. Like, all right, cool. Charge $15 on the account. The next person who comes, goes and picks it up at the fluff and fold, brings it to the house and drops off the other material. Hopefully the money for that would simply go through the host and you don't have to inherit and deal with that. That's the most common scenarios. we tried a lot of different things. I even considered like opening up a linen service for this. But by far the easiest for a remote local model is just only working with customers who have it on site.
Cool. Yeah. And that's what I've started to do, but I have gotten inquiries about taking care of the linens as well. And I like the fluff and folds model where you just, you know, you just continue to outsource that and bring it to them. You don't have to worry about it. As long as it's a local location, then that works out in your favor.
Yeah. And make it stupidly easy for the homeowner. They say, hey, there's a fluff and fold a mile down the road. I've already called them. Here's their rates. Here's all you need to do to pay them to set up an account. Cool. Go ahead and do this. And they'll say, okay, I'll just do this. And then you have it set up and you're running. So make it as painless as possible for them.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to, again, serving customers, I've also recently gotten, aside from cleaning, requests for more general housekeeping. So for someone to come in a few days a week, again, to do dishes, laundry, like let's say 3-4 times a week, get some groceries. And I'm like thinking about this would be a very highly recurring customer, right? Mm-hmm. 3-4 times a week. It's looking kind of valuable in my eyes. I'm curious, is that a market that you've ever tapped into or an opportunity that you've ever seen presented to yourself or your franchisees?
We get a lot of those calls. Not a lot, but like occasionally we'll get them and I get really excited. None of them worked out. Here's the reason why. The amount you would probably be charging, you'd probably be doing that mostly on an hourly rate. Mm-hmm. That's not sustainable for most of these people to be paying, right? For doing random errands, waiting at places, like it just doesn't make sense for them to be paying $40 to $60 per hour to get this done. So whenever we've quoted it, most people have not really bit on the quote. Now, occasionally you might have someone who's really wealthy and wants convenience. If so, the answer is, if the person you have lined up, the cleaner, is willing to do it, okay, that's fine. Nothing dangerous, nothing that's going to get you in trouble. Climbing a ladder, chandeliers, like even if the cleaner is willing to do it, we just say, no, we don't want to deal with that liability. But the cleaner is willing to do it and says, hey, I'm going to charge this amount for this very abnormal task. You mark it up, send it to the homeowner and they're okay with it. Let it run, right? I would say the majority of those people, unfortunately, don't work out because they're looking for someone like $18 an hour who could do all these random tasks for them. And that's just not the type of service that we offer.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Cool. Well, Dan, I know we're up on time here. You came with a fire, man. Hopefully this is really helpful for you.
Yeah. I have one last question. It's a tribute to Guy Raz from How I Built This. It's another podcast I love to listen to.
Yeah.
He asks all of his everyone that he interviews. So I figured I'd ask you, how much of your success do you attribute to luck or just hard work?
Damn, that's a hard question. Luck or hard work? Honestly, I guess a lot more on luck and opportunity. On a higher level, like we're just kind of living in this country and I'm sure both born to parents who are like, they're doing well. Like we just have the platform to be able to do what we want, which is 100% luck of wherever we're born. And on top of that, I guess stumbling into this business model, figuring out like, oh, it actually works. Like this isn't something genius you have to do. So I'd probably say like 50 to 70% luck, just dumb luck of whatever else is coming. And then the rest would be hard work. Dan, what do you think, man? That's a good question.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a lot more sided on the luck than it is hard work. Like obviously you have to work hard to put yourself in lucky situations. Mm. Right. And you open the door for additional opportunities by working hard. But to your point, by being born in this country and having some version of capital to be able to invest to even start this business, it definitely takes luck to begin with.
For sure. Yeah, and that's a hard question. I'm curious, do most people on that show answer luck as well?
Yes. Predominantly, people definitely say mostly luck with a lot of their success attributed to it.
Yeah.
And then hard work is there. You're not going to get
interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Dan, thanks for hopping on today on the pod.
It's great to be here. And I'm always excited to chat more with you and everyone else online.
Perfect. Dan, if people want to get a hold of you, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter. My handle is DanKatz23. That's DanKatz, Katz with an S, 23.
Perfect. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Neil.
Thanks again for listening, guys. There are two ways I could help you out. Number one is with May This Franchise. If you want to get into business but don't want to go at it alone, we have you covered with everything from A to Z. Check out madethisfranchise.com to start your own remote local business. The next is with the Remote Local Blueprint, which is a course I launched to teach you the foundations of starting your own remote local business in any niche. It's do it yourself at your own pace, and you can check that out at blueprint.beremotelocal.com.